This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Hare mai, kia ora tanakwe. Sorry about that. Forgot to put the fader down. We're here on a very miserable Sunday afternoon. It is black outside. So look out. If you have to go out this afternoon, please take a raincoat with you. Yes. So welcome to the show. The future of American politics, Colin Comet is next. In the history lesson, what was Sir Peter Jackson doing this day? A couple of famous birthdays. Number one, New Zealand, October 13, 1982. New Zealand of 1986, Dwayne Porter and Trevor before 2 o'clock this afternoon. So looking forward to that very, very shortly. Colin Comet, the opinion is mine. It's just under 30 days before the Americans go to the poll. Well, they've already started voting with mail polling, of course, doing it by mail and post-voting, of course. Almost decisive election in American history as Trump tries to occupy the White House again by lying, alleged lying, corruption and accusations. The January 6th insurrection is still raw in people's minds. It's now proven that Trump supported, even encouraged that day in 2020, even though his then VP, Mike Pence, and threw him under the bus. Then came the rise of Make America Great Again, MAGA. Since then, supporters like Ted Cruz, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Matt Gaetz, and others, see Trump as the second coming. In the last 6 months, Trump has gone coast to coast claiming the election was rigged, false accusations, and Biden and his family. It's the age of conspiracy theories. In the era of litigation, debunking as Trump went to court after court and was turned down most times, he's now a convicted felon. And he could be convicted because it's alleged he broke the Logan Act dating from 1799, forbidding private citizens, yes, Trump is a private citizen, from having conversations with people like Vladimir Putin. It has been reported that Trump phoned Putin around 7 times. If found guilty, Trump could be jailed for 3 years on each charge. So for Trump, already a convicted felon, jailed for 3 years plus 7. That's 21 years. So we'll keep an eye out. If we're talking to Gary this afternoon, we'll talk about the Logan Act and much, much more. October 13, it's day 286, 79 to go. October 13, 2024. 1999 this day, Sir Peter Jackson begins filming the Lord of the Rings trilogy on New Zealand locations. In 1967, by executive order, President Johnson ends gender discrimination in the government.
Mr. wrote me a letter. I don't care how much money I gotta spend. Got to get back to my baby again. The only days are gone. I'm a going home. My baby just
1925 this day, Baroness Thatcher, UK Prime Minister born, dying 2013.
Time
your lamb away. 1968, actress B. Benaderet, Kate Bradley in Petticoat Junction, and the voice of Betty Rubble in The Flintstones dies. Nineteen forty-two this day, singer-songwriter Paul Simon, Simon and the Garfunkel and solo artist, was born. Paul Simon's 81 today.
When you're weary, feeling
this day, the Princess Elizabeth and Sister Margaret Rose appear on the Children's Hour on BBC Radio. This day, singer-songwriter, politician, Greek, Nana Mouskouri. She's having a birthday today. She's 89.
If you should ask me to open my heart, there is so much that I could say. But when I'm with you, I just don't know where.
And what was number one New Zealand this day, October 13, 1982? It was a trio. Called Trio. And they released a song this day in 1982. Get your memory banks working. Remember this? Well, that's not Trio. This is Trio. That was another band. I would think there was a Flock of Seagulls. Try this.
I know why you went away, uh-huh. Understand you couldn't stay, uh-huh. Wonder where you are today, uh-huh. After all is said and done, it was right for you to run.
Ich lieb dich nicht, du liebst mich nicht, aha. Ich lieb dich nicht, du liebst mich nicht, aha. Ich lieb dich nicht, du liebst mich nicht, aha. Ich lieb dich nicht, du liebst dich nicht, da, da, da.
FM 89.0 independent community media cosmopolitan news and views. Apologise for all the mix-ups. Yeah, can't read me own writing sometimes. Anyway, that is Trio Da 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 from 1982, was number one New Zealand this day, 8:01. Yes, coming up, I think we're speaking to John Terrace and possibly Gary Schofield before two, plus Trevor and also Dwayne this afternoon. Anyway, New Zealand 1986, the Goods and Services Tax, GST, set at 10% introduced. Deregulation sees the monopoly of the Ministry of Transport ending, issuing driver's licences. There was a 10.7% unemployment rate. New Zealand police were 100 years old in 1986. The $1 note replaced with a coin. Can't even remember the $1 note, can you? Mount Taranaki, the alternative name for Mount Egmont. And Murray Mexted, she marries Lorraine Downs. And in 1986, we were listening to the one and the only Tim Finn with his hit song. Yes. Very anti-establishment, which of course was called, well, we'll play the song anyway, you know it.
No fire, no rain. With thy
FM 89.0, independent community media. 2 minutes to one, that is Tim Finn. No thunder, no fire, and no rain, as we remember New Zealand back in 1986. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. In our space age, contrary to promises of peaceful purposes in space, scientists' focus delved into Star Wars scenarios of destroying enemy rockets on the ballistic fringe of space before warheads could reach targets on Earth. Israel trusted its iron domes to save its cities from harm, yet, to their surprise, some rockets still got through, striking their targets. With nuclear capability suspected of both Israel and Iran, might one or other of them trigger the ultimate fear of nuclear conflagration? Gary Schofield's been delving into this. Good afternoon, Gary.
Good afternoon, and good afternoon to Mel and Bruce. And yeah. I'm fascinated by this topic, but I also wanted to announce some science and some scientific insight into how the universe is actually put together on the same topic as well. And the short answer is, it most certainly could easily escalate into a nuclear conflict. And at a time where humanity is at the brink of such wisdom and such knowledge in understanding the structure of our universe, wouldn't it be a shame to end it at this point? But I did want to just get into this topic, and correct me or stop me if I have talked too long on this, but the theory of everything is what, like the holy grail for scientists. So scientists want to be able to put in mathematical terms simple equations that describe the universe, and this has been an ongoing struggle for scientists for some time. And the reason for this is because it seems like everything's complicated, but when you look at it, you think, for example, that magnetism and electricity are two separate forces, but it turns out they're the same force, electromagnetism. And over time, back in the 1960s, it was discovered that the weak force, the actual force that gives us radioactivity, and electromagnetism are part of the same force. So over time, we've discovered as scientists that there are only about three major forces, fundamental forces, that shape the universe that could be described by simple equations. And they are the strong force that holds quarks and atomic nuclei together, and electro-weak force that I just described, and also gravity, which is this mystical force that Einstein described in his theory of relativity. But the trouble is that the theory of relativity, which is the cosmos of the very large scale of the universe, does not equate to the very small scale of quantum mechanics. So where does this actually, and this is why we're getting into topics like quantum gravity and all this other exciting things on the fringe of scientific discovery, but I digress. So what is it, and when is it, that these forces could equate into a force in what's called the unified field theory? We have to go back nearly 14 billion years for this, back to the Big Bang. Because when you think about what the Big Bang is, it's all the energy and matter of the universe concentrated into one point. That's called a singularity, which ought to ring a bell, because that's what a black hole is. So a black hole is all this matter that crushes in on itself with its own gravitational force to such a degree that light itself cannot escape from that black hole. And the recent insight into all of this has been discovered about black holes and dark matter. And this is the exciting scientific development that I did want to talk to you about.
Yeah.
But is everyone on board so far?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Do I have to call you professor now, do I?
No, not at all. And so here we are. So, well, we're back nearly 14 billion years ago, and the universe starts to expand, and it expands with the Big Bang, and we're up to the present. So what's the future? So the other big question is, does the universe continue to expand, or is there enough matter in the universe that at some point the gravitational force of that matter will slow the expansion of the universe down, and and it'll come back into a big crunch, as if there's some kind of cycle to our universe. So that was a big question for a while. And then what happened was the matter was tallied, and it's not even close. So there's not enough matter in the universe to do that.
Yep.
But then dark matter was discovered. So dark matter is this very strange matter that is the majority of matter, you know. So, and it has characteristics that you can't tell what it is or where it is, and you can't see it, and it exists out there, and it actually forms the entire structure of the universe around which galaxies form, and we have that structure of the universe. So that in itself was quite extraordinary, and it threw, you know, scientists out that such a phenomenal thing would occur. And then in the 1980s, dark energy was discovered, which is this extraordinary form of energy that it's repelling even faster away, you know, so we're expanding at an accelerating rate. And fascinatingly, I actually got to meet Brian Schmidt, who was the co-discoverer of dark matter, when he came to Washington, thanks to my friend Connie Lawn. So scientists have got different rock stars. But anyway, getting back to the topic, which is most of the matter and energy in the universe, we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So how can we possibly have a theory of everything when there's this enormous gap in our understanding, and it is like being on planet Earth, on the surface of planet Earth, and not knowing what water is.
Yep.
That's how profound that is.
Anyway, Gary, let's talk about what else has been happening, because there's a lot of...
Before we do, I've got to get to the punchline. This is the interesting bit. So just recently, and we're talking days or weeks ago, it was discovered, and it was an insight that what dark matter actually is primordial black holes. So at the beginning of the universe, when everything was crushed together, those were formed, and over time they have become microscopic black holes. So in fact, there's a thread of dark matter throughout the universe that may be black holes. And so that can be, what's more exciting, that can be determined by experiment, because when black holes collide, they produce gravitational waves, as Einstein predicted. So this theory can actually be determined in our lifetime as being true or false.
Okay.
So that was that new discovery, so that's kind of exciting.
Yeah. Talk about lots of energy and space at the moment. We've got the alignment of the planets. We've had Venus flying over New Zealand, but also two phenomena down here in the... down under, as they say. We've had the Australis Borealis.
Yes, isn't that wonderful spectacle?
In the northern, they've got the Northern Lights, and I'm going to play the Northern Lights of Aberdeen very, very shortly, because...
That's the beauty of nature that we should be very mindful of course.
Yep, yes. So we're going to...
And solar, again, from our unpredictable, and you never know what the sun is going to throw at us, So we have all these sunspots and electromagnetic activity. We have to also be prepared for electromagnetic pulse and all those kind of things that we can also get from the sun, but from nuclear explosions, as we originally talked about.
Gary, we've had a Hurricane Milton going through places like Florida at the moment. Any reports from Stuart, please?
He's heading down there, as a matter of fact, against my... advice, but then, you know, this is how life is. So, yes, very dramatic having the two hurricanes strike the U.S., and there's talk and it's a debate whether or not it is a climate change related or a global warming, to be more specific, related event. But certainly, with the water temperatures warmer than they usually are, that causes a stronger storm.
Yep.
So, yes, it can be linked indeed to a warming planet. But anyway, but Stuart is heading down. His relatives are in South Carolina, and he has to go through North Carolina where the hurricane struck, and that's a little bit north of Florida, of course.
Yep.
But he's a sensible fellow. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, we'll talk about more of this next week, because it goes towards Marjorie Taylor Greene and all the falsehoods she's been preaching.
It also goes to funding. And yes, with Mike Johnson coming out and saying he's no longer interested in funding what he considers to be a stalemate, a prolonged stalemate in Ukraine, that we're talking a lot of money that could go into things like hurricane relief.
Yep.
And again, don't forget, in New Zealand, we've also spent or pledged $1 billion on Ukraine war.
Yep.
So that's also, we could also use with that money.
Next week, we must talk about the Logan Act, which Donald Trump could be hit with. The Logan Act, which forbids private citizens like Mr. Trump from contacting leaders like Vladimir Putin. After 7 alleged calls were made to Vladimir Putin, when he could face 21 years in jail because it carries, he did it 7 times as alleged, 3 years in prison. So he could face another 21 years in prison.
We're going to enjoy that conversation next week.
Yeah, I
tell you that. And also something else I found out about Trump, with all his casinos and his high life and all the things that he's involved with, he doesn't drink.
Well, fair
that
enough.
Came as quite an astonishment to me.
I'll let you do some work on the Logan Act. I just dug this
out. I'll be ready for you.
Because I was listening to Brian Taylor Cohen on his podcast this week, and this particular topic came up.
Well, here is a simple answer before we discuss it next week. If you can't talk to ruthless, brutal dictators, then you'll never solve your world's problems.
Yeah.
You'll never end wars, and you'll never have diplomacy, which is the solution to everything.
Yeah, anyway, but well, Trump's a private citizen now, so it's against the law. Hey, thank you. We'll talk next week.
All right, yes, okay, well, I look forward to that.
Bye-bye. He's gone. Great talker, isn't he? As we said, before we line up our next call, I promised to play you the song because the Australia Borealis, the Australis Borealis has been in the sky over this end of the world. And, of course, it's very big in the UK at the present moment. Here's that song. Free 89.0 independent community media, the late Robert Wilson and the late Jimmy Shan and his band Northern Lights of Aberdeen. Mel, our next guest.
Sudden closure of long-established facilities in rural regions can shake a community to its foundations. Whatever service it affects directly, diminished trading ripples through a small rural town and townships, adding to residents' alarm. Western Curtin is Ruapehu Mayor, and watching the situation with the preference for seeing a glass half full. You have three enterprises which seem to have been facing problems. One is the Malaysian concern producing paper and pulp closing announced, and the other was the mountain itself, Ruapehu. The ski fields up there, after COVID and climate warming conspired to lessen patronage on its slopes, Western, things weren't looking too good.
No, it certainly is changing times, and thank you for having me on your show. It's really quite disappointing that, you know, the mountain hasn't produced the snow that it promised. We do have the odd occasion where, of course, we have a huge dump and away we go again with a whole lot of people coming into the area. But the companies that have been working on the mountains over the years have been struggling to keep up with climate change, and also the fact that that business is pretty fickle at the best of times. So we've been through eruptions, we've been through a whole lot of changing of the guard, as it were, and now we have a situation where both sides of the mountain will be administered by independent companies, and we're conscious of the fact that there's a little bit of work to be done for the Whakapapa side, REL, and that is currently under receivership. But nevertheless, we understand that working with Iwi and DOC, they are well underway to get that company up and running by early next year.
So if we look to a ski company at Oakune, did a deal earlier this year. That was to run the Tūroa ski field for the next 10 years?
Yes, that's correct. They are able to get over the line a bit earlier. They've had a season just gone. And, of course, Pura Tūroa is basically a local entity. It's got local people interested in obviously funding that particular ski field. It's obviously, you know, the Ahukuni side of it has a little bit more snow, but there's a huge amount of resource gone into that. They have been happy with the season. And of course, we've got to remember that it's not just skiing in the Ahukuni side. We've got other activities, cycling, tramping, and of course, being an alpine village, there's a lot of businesses there that reap the benefit of all year round activities. But from both sides of the mountain, you know, it actually creates a lot of the economy. Historically, it's been the core of our economy, but what we're now doing is having to adjust. As you've just indicated by your intro, that you know, it's hitting rural communities quite hard. But we're now looking at going to the government and putting a lot of resources into cycleways, for example. That seems to be the new trend. People coming in, enjoying the outdoors with electric bikes, and people being more mobile, more people, you know, getting out and about, either off the cities and overseas. So that's where we're going to head in the future. Keeping the ski fields, yes, but opening the door for other opportunities like cycling and tramping, which seems to be attractive.
Well, according to Simeon Brown, the Minister of Transport, he's put the kibosh on speed humps. He's told them that the councils have to pay for them themselves, and I think this also goes with cycleways. So you may be spending a bit of money putting in cycleways with no government help.
Well, I think it's always reliant on government. We've had a meeting with Minister Shane Jones, who, of course, is the, he's been a real supporter of the regions. He's funded many projects in the past, including the gondola, which, of course, is Whakapapa's, key attraction at the moment all year round. But getting back to the cycleways, yep. We have timber trails, we have different mountain-to-sea trails already up and running. And what we're doing is actually putting everything in front of the minister, saying this is going to be good for not only our region but the whole country. I think that's the thing that, I think people don't get really is that it's not just about the economy of a district. It's about, putting it all together as a package for New Zealanders and overseas tourism. Tourism is huge for our country, and it's basically what we do and do well. So I think all we're doing is just adding value to, the packages that some of these operators want to see. And Cycleways is huge in our area because of the outdoors. The environment, of course, is attractive for overseas visitors. And for good reason, the government will see that, I'm sure. We've already had a hint that they want to see shovel-ready projects up and running, and we're going to be doing that in the near future. So come early next year, we'll no doubt hear back from the government as to what they want to do.
We wonder if there might be similar announcements to come about the chateau itself sitting empty.
Yes, that's a very good point. Of course, we've been disappointed with some of the language that's coming out of the central government in terms of, what they want to do with the shadow. I think it's important to realise that this is not a bid to try and get government money necessarily to prop up this particular building or this icon. It's about getting a good platform so that others, like investors, can actually come and invest in this particular building because of its heritage value. Everyone wins. So the government, of course, had a stakeholding in this because of the heritage status. This economy in our district could reap up to $10 million a year, employing up to 70 people. So it's a win from the district point of view. But, of course, it's up to the individual investors to make up their mind whether or not there's a business there. I would suggest that there is. And we already have nearly 15 people that, or businesses, both overseas and local, that are interested in actually, revitalising, refurbishing that building because of its status, its mana. And all we need the government to do is actually get the concessions in place, get local iwi involved in various shape or form, and the ownership issue resolved. So I think, there's positive aspects to the chateau, and just to encourage everyone to sign the petition. Already we've got 13,000 people that have signed a petition, and that tells me that the rest of the country are watching with interest to see what happens here. And I've just told my wife that if I get the shadow over the line, then I'll retire.
Yep, good on you. You've been in local politics for a while now, haven't you?
Yes, I was mayor, and I started in 1986 when I was, in the 30s. So I became mayor when I was 40 years old in 1995. Faced similar issues with the mountain eruptions and various other things happening there. I've been on the regional council, so yes. So far, I've done something like 20 or 30 years of local government and still enjoying it. But, there is a time when, of course, you hand it over to young bucks and, to say, it's a privilege to be mayor.
Great record of public service.
You have to protect that chateau. I've been up at the mountain outside the chateau when the fog came in. I've also worked at THC Waitomo. You've got to protect these historic buildings, whatever it takes.
Absolutely. It's a fair comment. And this one in particular is nearly 93 years old. It was obviously built for tourism. It's at the foothill of a heritage park and still got that mana, has still got that heritage value. And I believe that with a refurbishment and listening to some of the developers and architects, they're saying that they want to design something that's going to last another 100 years. Yep. So I'm pretty confident that we'll get that over the line. It's just a matter of working through the issues, and over time we can report the outcomes.
Yeah, because that area, of course, is famous, of course, for the Tangawai disaster back in the 50s. And we can't forget what happened on that Christmas Eve night.
Absolutely. That's celebrated each, that's the wrong word, but it's commemorated each year. At Christmas, they have a candlelight sort of vigil, recognising it on an annual basis. But just in this last year, they went through the process of, acknowledging that 75 years, I think it is, that took place in 1953. I've got to say, though, that it wasn't the only one in this district. We have one north of Tomranui, at Ongarui, which is 12 kilometres north, And that was the first New Zealand disaster of railways history, and that was in 1923. It just so happens my grandfather was the station master in Tavernier and had to deal with it on that that morning where they lost 17 lives.
Yeah.
So that was the worst New Zealand railway history, and even today it's the third biggest disaster in New Zealand history. So we commemorated that last year, being 100 years, and that now has got a wonderful monument there just to recognise those who passed away.
You talk about family connections. You're no relation to my late Kaipaki school teacher John Curtin.
Yes, I am. My uncle's son. And so my father was John Curtin, and that name has gone through just like Weston. Yes, that's correct.
Yes, as I said, he was my school teacher at Kaipaki School from 1962 right up to about 1968.
Oh, wonderful. And you may also recognise the name with Earl Curtin, the All Black, in the 60s, and the time when he was 30 years old.
Yeah.
So he too is still going well, but he's well into his 80s as well, being an All Black.
Yeah, I think Mr. Curtin was a cousin to Earl Curtin.
Yes, that's right.
Anyway.
Just like I am. Yeah, we're both cousins.
Anyway, I just thought I'd better tell you that because you were talking about family connections. So,
given your optimism, I would think, Abe Weston, that you may well find that whereas it looks dismal from some points of view, that there may be someone who wants a Malaysian factory before it's decommissioned and the damage done to your economy. And as long as the Oakuni carrots still will come to... there's always hope.
Yeah, there is. And as you said in the intro, the glass is always half full, and always take that. You've got to be optimistic. And I'm confident that even the mill operation will be coming back in some shape or form. We're already listening to, the company dealing with that. I understand that they're in deep conversations with some potential bidders. So where that unfolds, I'm not sure, but we've just got to fight for what we believe in, fight for rural New Zealand, and we're a very resilient lot here. And we've had changes, we've had hits before, but you just got to reach for the sky and, be innovative and also be positive. And I'm confident that we'll get something out of line.
You talk about Shane Jones. He and the Right Honourable Winston Peters are in town this afternoon. Ooh. And he's Winston Peters is speaking in about 35 minutes at one of our hotels. It's the New Zealand First Conference in town this weekend, so... Yep. Yeah, Shane and Winston are in town at the moment.
Oh, that's great. Well, they're very good advocates of rural New Zealand, and I know they're under pressure at times, but we've got confidence that they might see fit to, help out some regions like Ruapehu.
Anyway, hey, Winston, thank you for being part of our show this afternoon.
Pleasure. Thanks very much.
It's a pleasure. Yes. Oh, all these names, all these W names, is 26 past one, Mel.
Yes, time that we go to the movies. We've got to seek the guidance of Andrea Haynes, who's a stalwart of cinema, and starting on Thursday week, the 24th of October, the British and Irish Film Festival will be opening, and that festival runs through until November the 13th. We'll be in touch with Andrea in a moment, and she'll tell us what's in store.
Talking about the media, she was a staple of British television back in the 70s. She was a lady who wore those big glasses. She's 89 today, former Greek politician. Her name is Nana Mouskouri. Yes, she's 89 today.
I just
technology at the start there. Nana Mouskouri celebrating a birthday today, and 4 in 20 hours we'll find another Nana Mouskouri song to play shortly for you. Good afternoon, Andrea.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I am well. You've been you've got square eyes looking at all those screens. So what have you been watching?
Oh, we've been, well, the Film Society's back on track again. So I've been having some very interesting films. One we had set in Egypt last week called Cairo Conspiracy, and another one we've got also from that part of the world called Ashkal. Then we're going into something from Carol Reed, Night Train to Munich. So we go from a real panorama of films across the year. But we've got something coming up this week that's really interesting on Wednesday, which is Show Me Short, The Sampler. That's going to be a screening on Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. at the Lido. And it's a whole six, now how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 short films from UK, from Ireland, from and Norway, and from Australia. So we've got a lot of a really nice program. Yeah. It's about an hour and a half, and they're all curated short films that we're very lucky to get. But we've only got one night.
Yeah,
so that's at 6:30 on Wednesday.
I believe there's a whole festival of short movies coming up, and I see there's only one showing here in Hamilton.
That's correct. Exactly. Yeah. That's the one I've just been talking about.
Yeah.
The stars include the like Joanna Lumley is actually in one of the films.
Yeah.
And so I just really, really recommend it. It's if we don't get support, then, you know, it doesn't seem worthwhile making the effort to bring it here. So I just hope we get a really, really good audience.
Yeah.
Because it certainly needs to be seen.
Just a little bugbear with me because of my Scottish heritage. Why wasn't it called the English, the Scottish and the Irish? Because I think Scotland is still part of the UK. It hasn't left yet.
Oh, yes. All right.
I know. I had to ask you that question.
Yeah. No, of course, the British and Irish Film Festival is coming up. That starts in Hamilton on the...
Thursday week.
We're going right back now. Fortunately, it's after I get back from the from Australia, so that's great. Starts on Thursday, the 24th of October. So that's got a great selection of interesting films. So that from the likes of the Stones, Brian Jones, so you've got your musical aspects to it. We've got a film I'm looking forward to immensely called Made in England, which is the films of Powell and Pressburger. Now, the Film Society has shown a number of these films, which were quite controversial when they came out. So I'm looking forward to seeing people who actually put in motion films like The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp, Black Narcissus, and The Red Shoes. So I think that would be a film that would be of great interest to many of your listeners.
Well, Colonel Blimp has got a bit of a Scottish thing with it, because Deborah Carr's in it.
Ah, right.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's another film, a two-hour concert of Britpop at Wembley Stadium. So that's an interesting one as well. But there's also some interesting films that have sort of a drama to them that I think people will enjoy. It's a very nice Irish film called Tarak, and that's Aoife Niamh Brannan returns home to help his father Brendan, the bear, in his recovery from a heart attack. So it says it's lined with humour, heartbreak and exciting action set against the stunning landscapes and seas of the Kerry Gale ship. So that sounds to me like an amazing film to see. And Lies We Tell, In all. Now, one that people have been talking about and I'm interested in seeing is called the Salt Path. It's based on the Sunday Times bestseller by Raina Wynn. The Salt Path is the story of a husband and wife who miles 630-mile trek along the beautiful but rugged English coast from Dorset to Somerset. So I think that could be fascinating because in the recent film festivals, I did note that there was a considerable interest in Hamiltonians and going to films that actually depict people doing things that are a bit against the odds. So I think that one would do really well.
Yep. Well, Andrea, that's a rundown. So they can go online and check out what's the the venue at the Lido and have a cup of char or have a little bit of a drink and enjoy the movie, sit back and be entertained.
And relax, yes.
And come back safely from your foray into Australia.
It's a pleasure. Hey, Andrea, we'll speak again.
Okay.
It's a pleasure. Bye bye.
Okay.
Bye bye. There we are. Our movie expert, along with Dr. Richard Swainson, who we also talk every once in a while, and David. And hope you get along to the Lido for the British and the Irish Film Festival. Back to Nana Muscuri.
Απ' το παραθύρο μου στέλνω ένα, δύο και τρία και τέσσερα φιλιά που φτάνουν στο λιμάνι, ένα και δύο και τρία και τέσσερα πουλιά. Πώς θα θέλα να είχα ένα και δύο και τρία και τέσσερα παιδιά που σαν θα μεγαλώσουν όλα να γίνουν λεβέντες για χάρη του Πειραιά. Από την πόρτα μου σαν πω δεν υπάρχει κανείς που να μην τον αγαπώ. Και σαν το βράδυ κινητό ξέρω πως, πως θα τον ονειρευτώ. Πέτρα διαβάζω στο λαιμό και μια χα, και μια χα, και μια χάντρα φυλακτώ. Γιατί τα βράδια καρτερώ στο λιμάνι.
Well, it's Nana Muscuri and the version of a song popular many, many years ago called Never on a Sunday. Thought I'd play that song.
The ramparts are falling in TVNZ's struggle to keep its viewers tuned to their TV sets rather than run like rats to digital platforms, offering essentially the same news and focus, but at a time they find suits their lifestyle. That's what they're up against. John?
Oh, sorry. Turn the button on. Hello, John.
How are you?
Yeah, no, we're with you. I forgot to press the button anyway. Yeah, no, what Mel was saying, it's Fortress New Zealand at the moment with TVNZ.
Yeah, well, it is, I mean, a fact that they're going to have to go digital, and they've already signalled the fact that this is going to have to happen because they can't otherwise make ends meet. And it isn't really a surprise. What I think is happening is that it is going to have the effect of a major upheaval, because it is the first of probably what will have to be many steps in the same direction. We are no longer living in an age where technology can just be, or the advances in technology can just be ignored. We've got to adopt them, whether we like to or not, because it's the way that the world moves these days. And we are in the middle of this sort of huge technological wave, which continues to break on our shores and to have quite serious effects, particularly on the job market. There'll be people employed at Television New Zealand will be worried about their future right now.
The Waikato Times, October 8, your colleague Miles Thomas, a trustee of the lobby group Better Public Media, said it was opposed to any cuts, and if they were necessary, that would be due to a lack of funding from the government. Is it time for Radio New Zealand and TVNZ to be one entity like they were back in the 60s?
I can't imagine why it was that the previous government did away with that idea, because it was a very sensible one.
Yeah.
And, you know, having our own community-owned or publicly-owned radio and television as part of a single entity is simple logic. So why it hasn't been done before, it just beats me. I mean, I don't understand. Television, of course, is a lot more expensive to produce than radio, as you guys would know. And the idea of a merger is something that has come and gone and come and gone and come and gone several times, but nobody's actually ever done anything about it. And I think to some extent you could say that TVNZ is unfortunately the author of its own misery, if you like,
yeah.
In that the inevitable digital revolution yeah. has caught up with it.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about this before, but it was your colleague, Sir Roger Douglas, who split, of course, TVNZ and Radio New Zealand and the NZBC, all commercial stations. They were split off into about three groups.
Yeah.
And,
yes, indeed, it was all rather a long time ago. I mean, when you're talking in terms of innovation, technical innovation, 30 years is actually quite a long time, which is when Roger Douglas was riding high. and in 30 years, an awful lot can happen that will force you to introduce various changes that have to be made. So, I mean, you know, sure, there's going to be upheaval. Sure, it's going to be unpleasant for, particularly for the staff. But it's not just necessary; it's inevitable that broadcasting, radio, and television embraces the digital age.
And in Media Matters in New Zealand, an organisation which you are president of, is this all assumed to be a natural extension of what we already have? Or is there concerns that along the way, someone, somewhere, is going to miss out?
Look, I mean, I think that, Mel, that you put it so well. With this kind of change, there's a very real sense in which nobody knows what they're doing, because you don't know the outcome. You don't know the outcome until it actually takes place. And so you can't predict exactly what effect it's going to have on the individuals concerned. I mean, that's the worst thing that can happen to technical innovation of any kind. There may very well be casualties. Who knows? I think I might have talked to you guys about this before, and recalled a time when I was made redundant at what was one of TVNZ's predecessors, the NZBC, which was the same, only different. But, I mean, I was made redundant there because technical change required that they needed fewer people with my particular sort of expertise. And that will happen again and again and again. I mean, who knows what the impact will be of AI, for example, on television. Who knows?
They won't need announcers.
You know? I don't know.
Looking back over your life, John Terrace, which of those professions you chose gives you the greatest satisfaction in hindsight? Politician, broadcaster, or priest?
Yeah, I mean, I've never regretted doing all three. And there was a time when I was doing all three at the same time, which is slightly crazy. But of the three, I would say that all of them gave me an equal opportunity to advance my understanding of things, people, and the way that the world works. What I treasure most, and what has been the longest in terms of time and satisfaction, it's my church work, because that gives you an opportunity to do something for other people. And I have found over I'm 85 now, and you know, still ambulance, still getting around, but you know, I'm in a position where I can look back on a long life and say, well, you know, I've been extremely fortunate. I've had health reversals, certainly, but managed to overcome them by the grace of God. But I do have the good fortune to have had a long life, and in that time have done many interesting things and met some wonderful people. So if it was my time, if my time was up tomorrow or even in 5 minutes, I would die a happy man.
We couldn't wish anything better.
Nothing better. No, I think you're going to be around with us for a while. Anyway, that's the main thing.
So.
Hey, but
Bruce, I'm counting on it.
Well, I think all three of us, I'm 67, Mel's in his late 70s, you're in your 80s, so we've got over 100 years of experience.
And we're still plugging away here, so that's a really good
thing. Yeah, so, you know,
the other good thing about this is that more and more with technological change, we have to re-educate ourselves, we have to rebrand ourselves, we have to repurpose ourselves, and that's always a challenge. But it's the way that the world works these days. Change is inevitable. That's the only thing that is a constant in our lives today is change.
Good advice to pass on.
Hey, John, thank you for your valuable time this afternoon, and keep us informed on what's going to happen with TVNZ and those multi-million dollar salaries that we were talking about when I was talking to you off air earlier. So,
watch the space.
It's a pleasure. Hey, anyway, thank you, John Terrace, Minister of the Cloth, Minister of the Crown, and broadcaster. Many times, many, many years to come too, John Terrace. Makes you want to get up and dance with that kind of music this afternoon. It's always Matt. There's always time. It's 13 minutes to 2 o'clock. Good afternoon, Dwayne Porter.
Yeah, good afternoon.
There is prospects of more people who might be able to take on, maybe damaged, maybe mechanically not in good condition, but as they are for auction, coming up when authorities have auctions to disperse equipment and exchange it for funds that are fed back to the government. Is that how we understand these sales?
Yes.
And where is the examples of that happening?
As from tomorrow, or being up at Whitianga, there's a an auction up there.
What's being auctioned?
Yep. We've got a tractor, and we also got a couple burnt out cars and utes.
The usual ones, repossessed, perhaps, recovered?
No, these ones here were stolen and recovered and burnt out.
Wait, what a waste.
Well, yes, it is, but up there, it's a... that's one of the best targets that the police can actually get up between there and Coromandel area.
Any sit on lawnmowers?
I just looked at my list at the moment. Yes, I've got three sit on lawnmowers down in Invercargill.
Oh well, if you're in Invercargill listening to us at the moment, you can always go to this auction and you set yourself up as a lawn mowing person.
Well, yeah, I haven't checked when that auction is on, but we just set up a yard in Whitianga. Also got one in over in Rotorua, another one, and then just set one up in Apodiki.
In that auction tomorrow at Whitianga,
yep.
Examples of the makes of cars that...
Mazda Demio, a Isuzu utility ute. We've got a John Deere tractor.
And at Rotorua?
Rotorua coming up. We've got the a Toyota Hiace van, a Mazda Stella, and a Toyota utility ute, all been burnt out.
Right, and there's an auction down Opotiki way.
Yep, that's a that's the one we just started opening up in Church Street, Otrahonga, Opotiki, sorry. That's a new Holler tractor, which is there at the moment. And also we've got some more cars arriving in there as well.
And going as far south as we're likely to Dunedin.
Yep. Yes, we've just opened up one down in Dunedin. It's a pretty big, massive yard in Dunedin. We've got the combine harvester tractors and trucks and B trains and you name it.
They've actually got a class harvest centre, have they?
Yeah, that's where the auctioners hold it.
What about boats?
Yep, we've got a big auction boat thing coming up in Auckland on the, I think it's about the 18th. The 18th is coming up, but I have to check on that list.
Well, keep checking on your list, Dwayne.
But also, in Tauranga, we've got a truck and trailer auction sale coming up. So that's at Mount Maunganui. Also, we've got the next one is the finance company has put there's a big repossession sale on for boats, trucks, tractors, and utes. So. That's coming up next week, so hopefully we'll get another list coming through.
Oh, well, we'll check on your list next week.
Could be some good deals.
Well, there could be some good deals, but, as I say, is that you can start bidding online. That's when the auctions are. It's actually all online, so...
So it doesn't really matter where in New Zealand it may be, as long as you're prepared to go and to bring the vehicle, whatever it is, back home.
Well, we transport them, like if they do buy it, we transport it, we can go and get it transported, and then that covers the costs of what the auction is.
Then take your credit card.
Yeah, hope so. Thanks, guys.
It's a pleasure. Means us. Talking about age. We're young at heart. Good afternoon, Trevor.
Good afternoon, and thank you for that compliment.
How's it going?
Not too bad. To start off with, there was a put out on air a few weeks ago about a missing cat. I just want to reiterate on that message as I contacted the owner of that cat to see how they got on. And so far, that cat has not been located. This cat is called Louis, and it's a tabby and white cat. very cute looking. And if you do find it straying around or injured, it's phone 022-327-5779. I'm sure they would really appreciate that call.
Yep. I was going to chat to you today about something out of the Hamilton City Council, but I think I'd better keep it undercover because it may be of confidential...
sensitive information.
Sensitivity. I think you saw the story in the paper this week about what the council did, but we'll leave that for another day to all the details are worked out.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. I think that's the wisest decision. Yeah.
Anyway, what else is happening in your life this week?
Well, I'm going to talk about traffic.
Yes.
Now, I said this last week, because it's so serious, I'm going to just repeat that briefly this week. It's called Clever Smart Play. It's a computer screen. It was attached to the dashboard. I can't think of anything worse for a driver to drive along and looking at the screen at the same time. They go on about mobile phones using that one hand on the wheel talking. At least when that's happening, the driver's looking ahead at the traffic. The worst thing and the most common thing causes accidents, in my opinion, is lack of visibility on the road through careless driving and lack of attention.
Yeah.
So just recap on that.
Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about licensing to drive a car. Now, I saw today, this week, someone nearly got hit on that zebra crossing in Tristram Street. It's got lights and all sorts and signs up, as well marked. But the car went straight through, and the person that nearly got hit had to step back, waving the arms to prevent themselves falling on their back. That's how close it was. And I thought, well, maybe that driver doesn't have very good peripheral vision. So what I suggest, when people go for a driver's license or renewal, that they, apart from the eye tests, I mean, looking ahead, that they check peripheral vision as well. So they've got side vision as well as frontal vision.
Yep.
Because that driver may have no peripheral vision.
Yeah.
And therefore, this is where tragedies can happen on the road.
And this week, after about nearly 2 weeks of closure, the area around Clyde Street, Hamilton East, near where I live, is reopened. It opened around 2 o'clock on Thursday after being closed. And bus had to deviate out of that area. And it was a big industry in road cones. Out on Old Farm Road and other bits and pieces around that area. So, yeah, a few angry people.
What are they doing there exactly, do you know?
I don't exactly know, but it was a great industry for road cones.
Yeah. They got River Road's much the same at the moment.
Yeah. Anyway, and as I said earlier, Simeon Browner says the government will not pay for any more speed bumps, humps.
Well, I think that's a concern, those humps, particularly for ambulance. They've got a patient with spinal injury, as well as other injuries that needs urgent attention to hospital.
I heard about the emergency services having to go at Hamilton City Council for this. So,
could cause paralysis. They've got an injured spine.
Yeah.
Going over a hump could be just enough to trigger them off for a lifetime of paralysis.
Comment, Mr. Driscoll.
To talk of a coming event, it concerns the United Youth Orchestra. Now, this is by donation attendance there, and this is an example of where our future musicians emerge from. It's their spring concert, the United Youth Orchestra's, and it's next Sunday at 3 o'clock in the Gallagher Academy of Performing Arts. The leader of that orchestra is William Zhang. The conductors, Tony Wu and Yoshi Tatsumi. The piano soloist, William Zhang. And the works presented in that magnificent venue include Chopin's Piano Concerto No. 1 in E minor, Sibelius' Spring Song, Grieg's Last Spring, and from Delius, Something About the First Cuckoo of Spring.
Oh, the cuckoo waltz, is it? I'm not up to me play with my classical music sometimes, but I do love classical music. Here's a man who's celebrating his birthday today. He's Australian, American. We won't hold him against that. But his name is Joe Dolce. Let's go back to 1980. Birthday boy today. See you next week.
Hello, I'm Giuseppe. I got something special for you. Ready? Uno, due, tre, quattro. When I was a boy, just about the eighth grade, Mama used to say, don't stay out too late with the bad boys. Always shoot the pool. Giuseppe going to flunk a school. It makes me sick, all the thing I gotta do. I can't get no kicks, I always got to follow rules. Boy, it makes me sick just to make the lousy bucks. Got to feel like a fool. And the mama used to say all the time, what's the matter with you? Hey, gotta no respect. What do you think you do? Why you look so sad? It's not so bad. It's a nicer place. Ah, shut up for your face. That's my mom, I can remember. Big accordion solo. Glad that to say. Really nice.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.